Well, tonight we're going to go hunting for Atlantis. How about the Hall of Records? Dr. Gregory Little, our guest, and we'll be back with him in a moment as we talk about Edgar Cayce on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Gregory Little is the co-editor of Ancient Mysteries, which is a monthly newsletter for members of the official Edgar Cayce Organization, the Association for Research and Enlightenment. Great organization. Beginning in 1997, Greg began investigating a portion of the psychic readings of Edgar Cayce, which specifically covered the history of ancient America. This research culminated in the books Mound Builders, Ancient South America, and The Secrets of the Ancient World. In 2003, Greg and his wife Laura took over the ARE's long-running Search for Atlantis project, which focuses on the Bahamas area. During 2003, Greg and Laura made numerous trips to Bimini and Andros Island investigating sites that had initially been discovered in an extensive satellite imaging project, as well as underwater formations photographed from the air in the 1960s. They found that all of the sites had natural or modern explanations, but unexpectedly, on what they had initially planned to be their last day on Andros, they discovered a massive three-tiered stone platform under shallow water. Lots to talk about again with Dr. Gregory Little. Hi, Greg. How are you?
Hi, George. I'm fine. Good evening or good morning, whatever the case may be.
Absolutely, wherever people might be. This Andros discovery of a few years ago, anything new there?
Well, yes, we did go back, and I'll get to that. I want to make one quick correction. John Van Auken, who's the director of the ARE, is actually writing the Ancient Mysteries newsletter this time. I still do the website, but we just didn't have time to do the newsletter. We've been investigating so much, and actually, the discoveries are just unexpected. We really have not expected to find much of anything, but we have been. And Andros, we went there in May with an archaeologist from California by the name of Bill Donato, and I really have to give Bill a lot of credit.
So
Bill,
May of this year?
That's right. Okay. A few months ago, and we are still compiling our finds. Bill is writing an article. I have written a couple. We plan on submitting to some archaeology journals. We're also going to write an article to Nature, which is a British journal, very respected, asking for a retraction of an article that they published, actually two articles that they published back in the 1980 was the first one, on the Bimini Road. But yeah, we found a whole lot. Andros, when we went there, was partly covered in sand. The sands shift so much at Andros because it just seems to be right in the center of the hurricanes over and over. We wanted to look at a specific area where we went with the History Channel last year in 2004 to make a documentary with them. And quite unexpectedly, I found something on our video while they were videoing me. My wife, Laura, goes on all these trips.
Yeah.
She usually videos from the surface. And one of the History Channel underwater photographers was sitting on a massive block, and he had me just kind of swim by or scuba dive by him so he could videotape it. And the block he was sitting on had a huge mortise on it. And then there was this rounded, strange area of stone in front of him that I had never seen before, and it had some rubble in it. Laying on the bottom there in the area where the harbor is, and that area was covered when we went back. That's what I wanted to see in May.
I see. All right.
But we did find another area at Andros that actually Bill Donato pointed out, and that is an area we want to go back and look at, and we really believe that that's an area that if there were structures there, ancient structures, that is where it would be. Unfortunately, it's in an area where the water is, it moves very quickly. It's on a point.
How deep is the water, Greg?
Well, the water over the platform itself is around 8 to 12 feet. And the reason I say 8 to 12 feet, it's because there's three levels or tiers to this Andros structure, and it appears to be a breakwater. Donato agrees with us that he thinks it is a was an ancient breakwater enclosing a small harbor in a really ideal location. And it probably was somewhat natural in that it was elevated, and frankly, that's the way that they were built in the Mediterranean. The Phoenicians built harbors in the Mediterranean as early as 4000 BC, and they usually found a natural harbor area, and then usually on the outside of the harbor, they would either construct a breakwater to make it safe to park boats or anchor boats in the middle of the harbor. But they tried to find harbors that had a natural sort of outcrop from the land that protected it, and then they'd build it up further, and that is what we think Andros is. And that, though, was not the most spectacular finds we made. Donato's been going down to Bimini. Actually, that was his 17th trip, which I was astounded when he told me that. He told me that, I think, the last day we were there. And he kind of shook his head, and he said that on that trip, we probably found more this May than all of the other trips people have made there combined. And I have to agree with that. And virtually nothing that we, everything that we found, I didn't expect any of it.
Well, that is something. You know, I want to get back to that. We've got two major topics to talk with you tonight, Greg. Of course, the Hall of Records.
Sure.
And also Atlantis and the search for Atlantis. But for a lot of people, I think we need to put it in perspective, too. We need to talk about this man, Edgar Cayce. I have written so many reports on Edgar in the After Dark newsletter and in other issues over my entire career, because this individual has fascinated me more than anything. When I was a kid, I would get his books and his stories. I was obsessed with it. Born in 1877, died in 1945. Tell us a little bit about what happened to him and how this truly mystical powers that he possessed came to be.
That's a great story. In fact, I was thinking about that yesterday. I did an interview with a newspaper reporter about the Kelly Hopkinsville Goblin case, which the 50-year anniversary of that very famous UFO case in 1955 is coming up. And interestingly, Kelly and Hopkinsville is where Edgar Cayce was born. And it is a kind of a haunted area. When Edgar was only 7 years old, he went to his mother, and they were fundamentalist Christians, and he told his mother that he was having visions, in essence, that he was seeing little people and angels. Angels were talking to him, and he had these little childhood friends, but he insisted that they were real, and he insisted that throughout his entire life. In fact, he actually gave some instructions about how to visualize these creatures. But anyway, at age 13, Cayce was outside, and he was reading the Bible, and he was reading a specific area in the Bible. It was the story of Manoah, which is about the appearance of an angel. Cayce had made a promise that he would read the Bible one time for every year of his life, from cover to cover. So he was reading the story of Manoah for the 13th time. And he was in the woods in a lean-to where he spent a lot of time. As he was reading this story, he felt a presence, and he looked up, and it was basically a woman. But he could see that there was something different about her, and she appeared to have wings folded behind her. And he looked up, and she smiled, and she said, "Tell me what you want most of all." And Edgar just immediately blurted out, "Well, I think I'd like to help sick people." But mainly children. And she kind of smiled and said, "Well, then it will be yours." And she disappeared. Edgar went home, told his mother, because he was, of course, fundamentalist Christians, afraid that maybe it's demonic or something. And she said, "Well, maybe it's a sign that you'll be a doctor or a great healer or something. But don't worry about it. It can't be evil." So he immediately started showing certain kinds of psychic ability. But it wasn't until he was in his teens when he lost his voice. Actually, it was his early 20s. He lost his voice. Hypnotism at the time, which was called mesmerism, was just being played with, really, and experimented with by doctors. And a local hypnotist hypnotized Edgar when he lost his voice. And then Edgar could speak when he was hypnotized. And he gave the hypnotist instructions. to tell the sleeping Edgar Cayce to increase the amount of blood flow in the neck area. So the hypnotist did it, and then they all watched as Cayce's throat became bright red. The hypnotist then woke him up. Cayce spit some blood, but he could speak. A local physician, this was not a hypnotist or a charlatan, it was a local doctor, then found out about this, and he decided to test Edgar, and he began hypnotizing Edgar and then asking him about medical cases that he had, particularly cases that the doctor had no cure for or remedy at all.
Almost hopeless cases.
Yeah, absolutely. And Cayce began then diagnosing people, psychically diagnosing individuals without even being told what their problem was, where they were. He would talk about entities, and then he would say what the problem was, and then he'd usually recommend some form of treatment. The doctor wrote a article about it that got into a medical journal, and then other physicians got interested in it. And they began testing Cayce, and then one of them gave a presentation at a conference, and the New York Times picked up on it, and they dubbed him the Sleeping Prophet, and that supposedly, at least according to the American Medical Association, is the beginning of holistic health in America. Cayce gave 14,256 readings that are documented, and by that it means everything he said in the readings was written down. It's available through the ARE. They actually have the original transcripts there.
And most are health-related, right, Gregory?
About two-thirds of them are related to health. That's right. Yeah. Two-thirds of the 14,000-plus readings are health.
His readings also delivered holistic treatments.
Absolutely.
And I found that to be remarkable. It's almost as if he tapped into this planet. He was able to recommend specific herbs, treatments like that. I read them all the time. I've got an old book that was sent to me years ago by one of my listeners, and it's just an old Edgar Cayce remedy book. Mm. And it's fascinating because I think in many cases, Greg, mainstream science today and mainstream medicine, they looked at those remedies and then tried to develop prescriptions to fit them today.
Yes, that's absolutely true. A good example of that, there's a state-of-the-art treatment for cholesterol now is to use one of the statins with a dose of niacin.
Right.
And niacin, Cayce actually was recommending high niacin and high folic acid foods for people who had high blood pressure or who had what he called poor circulation he didn't call it cholesterol because they didn't have the term at the time, but he talked about poor circulation because the arteries were actually beginning to clog up.
That's right.
And that's one really simple example. And he gave certain remedies like eating nothing but apples for one day to clear your system out. And his way of looking at how the body dysfunction was very different at the time. It's still somewhat different. And modern medicine, though, just basically looks for a very quick cure, which I don't really blame them. I mean, I want a quick cure when there's something wrong with me.
Sure.
But Cayce was quick to say that those quick cures are not the way to go because you're not really getting at the fundamental problem.
So two-thirds of his readings were based on health, but the other third based on just some incredible things, Earth changes, Atlantis, life beyond our planet. I have found these to be the most remarkable.
Yeah.
In terms of accuracy, Greg, let's talk about that for a moment because that's going to be very critical to the things we talk about tonight. In terms of accuracy, I would say health-related, extremely accurate. The other third that had to do with strange and mystical things, how accurate do you think he is?
Well, we know the health readings. There's been several studies done, three published studies that I know of, and they all are in the high 80% range. And that doesn't mean that the rest were inaccurate. There's just no way for them to know.
There's no data on that.
That's right. But they know that at least 80-some percent of his health readings were just dead on. We actually started researching a lot of his readings on very specific topics, such as mound builders. That was my initial interest in this. Cayce gave a history of the mound builders that was basically impossible. I mean, it just could not have occurred. According to mainstream science, it could not have occurred until 1997, and everything changed then. Of course, we've done a show on that. In 1997, so many discoveries were made in genetics and in mounds and in South America that it made it possible for us to really take a look at what he said. And what the conclusion we reached, we got 68 mound readings out of all of his 14,000 readings. There were 68 different readings about mounds. And we laid these out into a series of statements that could be proven or disproven, and we came up with a percentage of about 85% of them were accurate. He also gave a whole series of readings on South America, which until actually around the year 2000 or so, it wasn't really possible to evaluate those because we didn't know enough at the time. His South America readings, we evaluated the exact same way, made a list. We actually came up with 10 specific things we could test. 8 of them were dead on, and one of them appeared to be correct. So he was probably 80 to 90%
correct
there.
So he's very high there. How did these readings of Atlantis, Hall of Records, what will happen to the coastlines of the United States, how did those come about? I mean, was there someone there who asked him questions about these?
Yeah, he always had a questioner, and they called that person a conductor. Casey actually went in, he laid down, he'd loosened his tie, he'd take off his shoes, he'd lay down and fold his hands over his solar plexus, go into this trance himself, and then after a few moments, the person who was the conductor would then ask a series of questions. And the questions were usually, they came up with them in advance. Casey didn't necessarily know what the questions were or even what he was going to be asked. His son, Hugh Lynn, who actually ran the ARE for years, was the conductor in a lot of those in later years. But others were done by doctors and various other people. And his first readings that were not health-related started in 1923. And actually, he didn't anticipate to being asked questions outside of health. And he was blindsided by this fellow by the name of Lammers, and it was in Dayton, Ohio. Lammers asked Casey to come to Dayton so he could spend some time with him. And during the reading, Lammers just started asking him questions about the ancient world. And Casey just started giving the answers, just as if, just like he would give the health readings. He would say, okay, I'm there, and I can see this now, and here's what it is. And it was astonishing. It actually scared Casey because as a fundamentalist Christian, there was one particular thing that came out of the readings that appeared to be against his primary beliefs, and that was reincarnation. The fact that people would have lives over and over again. And the readings did talk about reincarnation, and most of the information about the ancient world, not all of it, but most came out when he gave people's past life readings, which became known as a life reading.
Now, I assume when we talk about the Hall of Records, we're talking about Atlantis first. Is
that correct?
Okay. When we come back then, Greg, we'll talk about Atlantis. Later on tonight, we'll talk about your search for Atlantis, but we'll find out a little bit about what Edgar Casey said about Atlantis when it was here. You know, I've heard the 30,000 years ago. We'll talk about that. And then, of course, the Hall of Records. What are they? Where are they? There's apparently three of them scattered around this planet. Why were they hidden? What did they mean? What did they say about our existence? Where did they come from? All these Edgar Casey talked about. And we'll talk with Gregory Little about that as well. Couple websites linked up at coasttocoastam.com, edgarcasey.org. Mysteries-America.net, both of those linked up at coasttocoastam.com. But also, if you do have a computer, get up to the coasttocoastam.com website. Dr. Little has sent us a tie-in link clip to an incredible video which shows you some of these structures he's going to be talking about tonight. They are truly unbelievable. They cannot be naturally made. Take a look at them. You make up your own mind. That's one of the mysteries of Coast to Coast. And guests like Dr. Gregory Little, when you see this, when you see this video, you're going to say to yourself, my, 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 what happened a long time ago on this planet? I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I wish I were alive back in the early 40s. I would have had a chance to interview Edgar Casey. Wouldn't that have been something? Some time ago, Art Bell, though, had a chance to interview late Father Malachi Martin, and it developed a series of phenomenal programs. One is called Perfect Possession. That CD is available to you free when you subscribe and renew your After Dark newsletter subscription. Call 1-888-727-5505. Their operators are now 1-888-727-5505. You can also go online, safe, secure, simple, at coast2coastam.com. Go down to the bottom, look at the graphic called Perfect Possession, and take it away. And welcome back to Coast with our special guest tonight, Gregory Little, as we talk about Edgar Casey, Atlantis, the Hall of Records. Greg, how then did specifically the question of Atlantis come up with Edgar Casey?
Well, it started coming up in readings when he was giving the life readings, and he would tell people that they had a past life in Lemuria, which was before Atlantis, and also in Atlantis. And most of these people had 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 lives, although some of them had less. But the ARE actually, the ARE didn't exist, and the people who were doing the readings actually had some specific readings done where Casey laid out the history of Atlantis. And actually, those are rather long, and that's where we've gotten a lot of the information from.
As he began then to talk about Atlantis, I mean, what did he say? Did he say it was extraterrestrial, that it was just simply earthbound people? What was it?
Well, earthbound people, yes, they were human beings like us. He said that Atlantis started around 200,000 years ago. He gave a location for it, which was basically impossible, at least most people would think it's impossible, and that is that it extended from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way to the Bahamas.
But huge. Must have been a huge continent.
Well, if it was a continent, if you actually read Casey, there's nowhere where he says it was one huge solid landmass, and it depends how you want to interpret that. And he was actually asked by, in one of the readings, is it a solid continent? Is it a single landmass? And he wouldn't answer it. He did say that in roughly 50,000 BC, it began breaking up and that that five large islands appeared. The main island he called Poseidia, and Poseidia was made up of Bimini and Andros and the Great Bahama Bank, which for the first time, at least in my life, we went over the Great Bahama Bank from Bimini to Andros on a boat, and it is we took the depth all the way, and it varied from 2.5 feet deep to no more than 20 feet all the way. Most of it's 10 to 12 feet deep. So it was above the surface during the last ice age. There's no doubt about that.
Okay, so in these regions then, perhaps a larger structure that started breaking up into little pieces.
Into five large islands and lots of others. And actually, Plato called it an island empire, that there were many, many islands, and that by hopping from island to island, you could eventually get to the opposite continent.
Did he talk, Greg, about the people on these islands or in this region and the kind of technology that they had?
Oh, yes. He talked about the technology, and apparently they reached their highest level of technology before what's called the second destruction of Atlantis, which took place in 28,000 BC. At that time, according to Casey, they had blimp-like flying ships or dirigibles. And the technology that I talk about with the Atlanteans is not the fantastic technology that some people will tell you, that they had spaceships and so on. Casey did say they had underwater ships like submarines.
All right.
They had these blimp-like flying ships that used hot air, basically, or gas to propel themselves. But the gas was created by a crystal which focused the rays of the sun into a small beam, and that it heated air enough to where it could float these dirigibles and also propel them. They also used this crystal beam for navigation to go from one place to another, and for communication, which a lot of people think that that might be a laser. Some people have suggested he might be talking about something like fiber optics.
I remember when I was a kid, we had our crystal radio sets.
Absolutely. I talk a lot about crystals outside of this, but the technology that they had was fairly high in 28,000 B.C. There was, again, this island of Poseidon. There was a main city there, and he called the waters off of it Parpha, which I don't know of anywhere that we can match that to, except perhaps maybe the Gulf was called that then.
Okay.
But they did have a technology, but he said it was destroyed in 28,000 B.C., and by the time of the final destruction of Atlantis in roughly 10,000 B.C., they had never reached the same technology that they had in 28,000 B.C.
Now, did these Atlanteans then, once the area was destroyed, were some of them able to get away?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that leads to the extraterrestrial question. Casey said that sometime before, several hundred years before the final destruction of Atlantis, there were some specific individuals who were basically priests. And what these priests did was they used crystals to communicate with higher powers, higher energies.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the priests got communications from other worlds. That's how it's worded. And these communications told this priest of the impending doom and destruction of Atlantis. And strangely, in that reading, it even says that the plan to create the records of Atlantis was hatched through these communications. This priest then apparently took it to others, and they came up with the Three Hall of Records idea, and a lot of people did flee then. They migrated off the islands to South America, to North America, specifically in the eastern part of North America, where the Iroquois were.
Okay.
And he said that the pure red race were the Atlanteans, and they actually became the leaders of what we know historically as the Iroquois. Some of them went to Egypt. Some of them went to the Gobi Desert. Some went to Iberia, particularly a part of Iberia called the Pyrenees Mountains, which is between Spain and France.
Why didn't they all go together to one specific spot?
I don't know. That's not in the readings. It doesn't say. Some of them didn't leave. Some people just refused to believe it and didn't leave.
And they died.
Absolutely. That Casey says that, and Plato actually says that almost everybody that was on the islands died. He said that some people that were in high areas might have survived. Plato talks a lot about various destructions.
And about the destruction, and then we'll get into the Hall of Records. Did Casey talk about how Atlantis was destroyed?
He did talk about water rising very quickly. Most people have linked it to perhaps a pole shift. That's not in the readings about the destruction of Atlantis. Casey did talk about pole shifts that had gone on. But no, it was some sort of a cataclysm that caused tidal waves and earthquakes and so on. We've linked it to what's known as the Carolina Bays event, which occurred around 10,000 B.C. when a comet fractured and millions of pieces struck the east coast of America and the Bahamas and Cuba and all that area.
That is remarkable that a man would have the abilities to really pick up through readings these events that had occurred, almost as if he was planted in front of some kind of time machine television set.
Yeah, he said that when he went into this trance, it was not Edgar Casey per se who was speaking. Casey's consciousness, he said, went somewhere else, and there were entities there. And the more there were, the more help that he got. In fact, he felt best when there were lots of these helpers on the other side, and they would actually show him records which he could read.
As some of them then, Greg, decided to flee with their three, I guess, packs of information, which they had agreed to hide somewhere into a created Hall of Records. Any idea how much material we're talking about, and what do you think they consisted of?
Well, Casey was pretty specific about it. There were 23 tablets that the records were written on.
Total?
Right. Well, okay. for each record hall had identical objects in it.
All right.
And this was the priest that hatched this. They actually sent specific groups out to place these halls of records. The one to the Yucatan, for example, we know the name of the individual who actually took it. His name was Iltar. Iltar went with a group of 10 people, 10 individuals, and they took the tablets, they took the artifacts, which consisted of Atlantean linens. It had information about this crystal, which they called the Firestone at that time. They also took various implements, gold objects. In the one in Egypt, there's a mummy in there. Casey did mention that. But that's what they took. And on these tablets is the entire history of the human race from the very beginning until the destruction.
Now, when you talk about the history of the human race, are we talking about the history of the Atlantean human race, or was there something else going on the planet
well,
a couple hundred thousand years ago?
Well, back, Casey said that human beings started, this is astonishing, because when Casey gave these readings, and the one reading where he talked about the first human-like creatures was given in 1927, and he said that the first human-like creatures occurred 10.4 million years ago. And at that time, nobody believed that even apes were even close to that old.
That's true.
They thought that our relatives were maybe here for a few hundred thousand years. But he said that it was over 10 million years ago when they appeared. And now, paleontology tells us that our first human-like relatives occurred around 8 to 9 to 10 million years ago.
They're getting close.
Yes, it's getting closer and closer. And when that occurred, what Casey said was that souls, or the energy that's our essence, souls began moving into the earth and occupying animals, and they could alter somehow, and it's obviously DNA, but the energies could alter the DNA and then create different forms. And eventually, the human form was created. The first humans like us occurred on Mu, or Lemuria, which was in the South Pacific. He didn't give a time frame for it beginning, but apparently it's around the 10 million year ago mark.
Is it possible that the Sumerian tablets that Zechariah Sitchin writes about might be some of these Atlantean tablets?
I don't think that they're the Atlantean, the Hall of Records tablets, but I think they may be very similar in information, and it may be a different group that recorded them.
Same kind of story, though?
Same kind of stories, perhaps. I'll be real honest. I did not like discovering Casey's readings about extraterrestrials. I can't tell you exactly why I didn't like it, but I didn't like it. But it's there.
But if it's there and the truth be known, that's it.
Right, it's there. But there's more and more evidence that shows that there probably is life out there, and it may well have communicated with us at one time or another.
And may have visited us.
Absolutely.
Okay, so these groups then take these 23 tablets apiece of similar records hither and yon. Off they go. Their assignment, I guess, is one, to survive, two, to hide them somewhere.
Right.
Where do we stand in the search for these Hall of Records? I mean, we know, for example, that Casey said at the base of this foot of the Sphinx, there's some kind of cavern there. We know there is now. We don't know what's in there. We don't know if the Egyptian government's already confiscated it and taken things out. We don't know these things yet. But where are these three Hall of Records specifically?
Well, the one that's best known is the one in Egypt, and that whole idea of this record hall in Egypt comes from Casey. Last month, I spoke with Andrew Collins in the UK, and Andrew had been in Egypt, and there is a spot where Andrew believes it can be accessed. He's asked me not to say specifically where it is, and I've spoken with John Van Auken about it. It's somewhat off of the Giza Plateau, but it does apparently lead under the Sphinx.
A tunnel there, straight there?
Yes, okay. Which Casey said there was. And it went to where the river was at that time, mm-hmm. back thousands of years ago. So one was placed there. And the reason they placed them in these different diverse areas was, one, for safety. They wanted them to survive the coming cataclysm. But they wanted them to be hard to find and also preserved. So they had to be in a place where they could be preserved and had to be in a place where regular people who are just kind of poking around wouldn't accidentally find them.
Well, how would we ever find them then?
Ah, good. That's a good question. Obviously, the pyramids are there and the Sphinx is there. Mm-hmm. And so people would see this and say, wow. And as they recover more and more things there, they keep looking. Casey said, when the time is right, when we reach the correct level of spiritual development and have the right motives, then we can get in and access these records. But until then, we can't do it.
And then we have to interpret them.
And that's correct. Yeah. And that'll take some time, probably.
All right. So there's one out there in Egypt.
Right.
We believe that.
The second one was somewhere near Bimini. Casey gave a number of readings that linked Atlantis to Bimini, that linked the discovery of a portion of Atlantis off Bimini in 1968 and 69. Of course, that's when the Bimini Road was discovered.
Okay.
Initially, a lot of people thought the Bimini Road might actually be the remains of the temple. The Bimini Road itself is not that, but there's something under the Bimini Road, and we'll get to that later. But most people do not think that that temple is at Bimini per se. Casey talked about going to the south and to the west of Bimini.
Now, did they submerge this Hall of Records?
Okay. That one is underwater. Casey said rather specifically that the Hall of Records that is located near Bimini is underwater, but it will rise again. I think that one, if it exists, and I'm pretty confident something like that exists, I think it's near Andros, much closer to Andros. Andros is actually elevated more, and it's more solid than Bimini is. But that's another story. That one will be very difficult to find.
All right, and then the third spot.
The third one is really interesting. That is, when Casey gave the readings about that one, he didn't give the precise location. It was the group of people who were around Casey at the time in 1932, when he talked about the Yucatan Hall of Records. He linked it to the University of Pennsylvania working there at the very moment that he was giving the reading. And the people who were around him immediately contacted the University of Pennsylvania to inquire where they were working. And there was only one place they were, and that was Piedras Negras, Guatemala. Piedras Negras is an unbelievably interesting site. It's one of the most important sites in the whole Maya world. It's very mysterious. It has a mountain in it. We went there in 2004 and actually made a documentary about it. It is totally overgrown. Very, very little of it has been restored, and we do think we know perhaps how to get into it.
Do you think that's where number three might be?
Yeah, yeah. It has to be. If it exists, the readings are real clear. It has to be at Piedras Negras. And my wife and John Van Auken of the ARE wrote a book called The Lost Hall of Records on that. And that's why we made that expedition to Piedras Negras.
What an incredible feeling, Greg, to be in that region, knowing that it's possible that that kind of history is hidden away somewhere out there.
Oh, it was, I'll tell you, being there, of course, it was very hot. We had this, it's hard to get to. It's dangerous to go there. There's no easy way to get in and out of Piedras Negras. You have to go on a river ride on a little tiny boat, and it's a long, long way.
When we come back, let's go hunting for Atlantis on Coast to Coast AM.